Tucson, good morning to you. Welcome to this Thursday, July the 16th edition of Tipping Point here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Every day, in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Full show today. We're going to get right into it with Juan Ciscomani here in just a second. He oversees Governor Ducey's Southern Arizona office and is his senior advisor for regional and international affairs. When Juan and I wrap up at the bottom of the hour, we will go to break and come back with Steve Spain. He's a Republican running in the four-way Republican primary in District 1 for the Pima County Board of Supervisors to replace longtime supervisor, two-term supervisor, Ali Miller. Juan Ciscomani, welcome on the air. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Zach. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. Appreciate your time and lots to cover. Juan, I want to ask you, as in just a way of getting into our conversation, we've got more than COVID-19 to talk about, which I'm excited to get to. We're going to talk some infrastructure, some USMCA, some of that. But I do in this first segment want to catch us up here in Southern Arizona on COVID, where we've come from and where we go from here. You know, Juan, looking at the long-term slope and the curve of COVID-19, things seemed relatively on par with where we started back in March and April when we reopened later in the spring, and then things spiked incredibly. How did we get to where we are today, where we have that case spike that we have?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on. It's always good to talk to you, and it's also good to get a message out to the listeners here in Southern Arizona. First, let me say that this has definitely been a challenging time for Arizona, for the entire world, obviously, and country, but specifically for us, we've been through this, like you said, for quite a few months now. So first, I always like to start off by thanking all Arizonans, really, for the sacrifice that they've all made over the last few months. It hasn't been easy to adapt to. Some have lost loved ones, some have lost jobs, but there's been loss around us, and it's been a tough time, and a loss of our lifestyle and the way we were used to conducting things. When the year kicked off, the future was really bright. We were looking at everything we had done for the past few years, and we're really reaping the benefits. And of course, this came as a shock to the whole world. But I want to commend Arizona for really just adapting so well to that. And in terms of your question, every decision that we've made has been made with the health and the safety of all Arizonans as our top priority. That has been the top priority since the very beginning, with the advice of health experts, of course, and with the data and information that we have available at the time of making the decisions. That has been the model that we've followed to make these decisions. So in terms of how we got here, I want to just remind us all of a few important dates, and I'll go all the way back to January 27th, when the governor first activated the Health Emergency Operations Center. This is after the first reported COVID case came up in Arizona, and we acted immediately on that and set up this Emergency Operations Center that helped monitor the situation not only here but globally as well, how things were progressing. And then, of course, on March 11th, we declared the public health emergency. Again, as early as March, we've been on this. And then a slew of different executive orders have followed after that, including the school closure to address the staffing shortages, and in partnership with Kathy Hoffman and her office and other superintendents, the executive order defining essential services, which led into the executive order to stay home, stay healthy, stay connected on March 30th, which expired on May 15th. It was set to expire on April 30th. I'm getting my dates mixed up. At the end of May, and then it was extended 15 more days after that in order to slowly open. And that's back to your question and your point of, this is how, at that time, the numbers seemed to be trending in the right direction. The numbers seemed to be going well. The mitigation strategies were working, and we began to slowly open again, responsibly open, and going back to the to the services that we were providing before. And that's when, as you also mentioned, earlier in the summer, probably like late May, early June time, we started seeing these numbers spike up again and then trending in the wrong direction. And that's when we started taking, again, further action to mitigate the spread, including giving local authorities the ability to mandate masks and another series of executive orders that I can go through, but I want to get to more of what we're at today in terms of what we're seeing now. As high as the spike has been going over the summer, we've seen some positive news coming out lately here that I want to touch on as well. But I don't want to take up a long-winded answer. I want to turn it back to you and see if this is where you want to go.
Yeah, Juan Siskamani, appreciate it. And I want to ask, as you are evaluating things day to day, what are the metrics that are being looked at by the governor at the advice of the CDC and the task force that are making the decisions from day to day? I mean, we know, for example, that there's a rising number of cases. We know that hospital capacity has been slim. You know, we also know things like, I had this sent to me this morning, it was interesting, that hospitalizations as a percentage of total cases reported, that's a low number in Arizona compared to the rest of the country. There's a lot of numbers out there, Juan. What are the three or four that define the governor's decisions as he decides what happens on education's opening, closing, all that stuff?
Sure, that's a great question. And like you said, there are plenty of numbers out there that we can use. And as I look at the different steps and the executive orders that we've taken, you know, several factors have influenced those orders. When we go back, for example, to the March 30th stay home, stay healthy, stay connected order that, again, lasted through the middle of May. You know, at that time that we weren't seeing a high numbers like we were earlier in the summer, there it was all about freeing up PPE resources and hospital capacity if a surge did happen. We didn't know what was coming, and we saw trends in other parts of the country, and we were monitoring those numbers. So we were obviously monitoring our numbers as well, but we needed to act proactively and make sure that we were ready with both the first responders personnel, but also the PPE and all the resources that were necessary to tackle that surge if it happened. That action is actually what got us ready to be able to sustain what we were anticipating was going to be a spike in the early part of the summer. So in that case, that was the number and the data. Obviously, for the school decision, teachers weren't comfortable, and school districts came up saying, you know, we have a teacher shortage at this time. We needed to add uniformity across the board and across the state and add consistency. So in partnership with Superintendent Kathy Hoffman, you know, we issued the first order of 2 weeks, and then that moved up all the way to the end of the school year, which, as you know, now it's first day of in school, in-person learning has been postponed until August 17th. Again, in consultation with the same group of folks, the governor continually meets with the education community leaders, with hospital community leaders, with business leaders, and obviously health experts as well, Dr. Christ and her team and other national leaders on this also. So our decisions are really based out of a combination of the data that we're seeing from Arizona, also observing what's happening in other parts of the country, and advice from experts in different fields.
We're with Juan Siskamani, who oversees Governor Ducey's Southern Arizona office. I got a couple more just things I want to cover with you. Maybe try to fit in one more question before our first break, Juan. But looking back, is the state open too soon? And is the governor prepared to close things down even further if the surge continues?
Let me say this. The approach has always been, again, looking at where we are, what the numbers are showing, and we've been consistent in not being the first, not being the last in terms of jumping on these decisions. And some of the actions that we're taking to address your point here, for example, yesterday, the Arizona Department of Health announced that over 600 additional healthcare workers will be coming to Arizona from other states. That's good news for us, obviously, as we get the additional help. The situation remains serious in Arizona, no question about that. We're not out of the woods yet by any means. However, we are seeing some positive trends. For example, also yesterday, Arizona is what they call the R-naught score, which, you know, this means the average number of people who become infected by an infectious person. That's also declining. We want to be under one in that score, and we had been over one for the past weeks, and now we are under one as of yesterday. We're at a 0.98. So that's, again, another positive number that we're seeing. And we're putting this on, again, Arizona's acting responsibly. The new mitigation orders from the governor, anything from encouraging people to wear a mask and giving local authorities the ability to regulate and mandate that and enforce that, to also the recent closing of bars and other businesses that has helped get us to this point. So the other data point that I'll give you, and I know you probably have to go to break, but last week's total positivity is currently at 17%. That more tests are still coming, but that's down from 21% of the week before and 20% from the week before that. So again, not we're not out of this yet by any means. This is still a long distance race, but once again, we're seeing numbers move in a more positive direction than we had been seeing earlier this summer.
We're with Juan Siscomani, again, the Governor Ducey, Southern Arizona office oversees that, and his senior advisor for regional international affairs. Juan, thank you so much for your time this morning. We have one more segment together. We are going to go to a quick break. I've got a couple more COVID questions just to put a bow on this part of our conversation when we come back. And then I do want to talk about some infrastructure questions I've gotten from listeners, as well as the USMCA. We'll do our best to fit it all in. Tucson, we'll be right back. Don't go too far. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
With our workforce dispersed to home and the challenges of high unemployment, it's even more difficult to find the right people with the right skill sets. Leading companies are planning how to rebuild their teams and looking for critical talent now. Having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge and have positive impacts on time to hire, retention, and your employment brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and tune into Tipping Point every Friday morning for advice and insights around workforce pivots.
Tucson, if you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, give my friends at MassMutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. Tucson, welcome on back in. We're on the line with Juan Ciscomani. He oversees Governor Ducey's Southern Arizona office and is his senior advisor for regional and international affairs. Juan, as we get back into our conversation, you mentioned a couple of numbers going in the right direction in terms of COVID-19. Is that the result of the governor allowing local jurisdictions a little bit more flexibility to make some health-related decisions as he did within the last month? And on that note, a couple municipalities have been very vocal that the governor is not taking their calls or as frequently as he did in the beginning. Is it worthwhile to continue that direct line of communication? And would you say this more local control has produced the results that we all want?
Yes. Yeah, I think that it's really a combination of a variety of factors. The actions that we've taken at the state level, the executive orders, that's one piece. Another piece is really Arizonans overall acting responsibly and showing personal responsibility. I don't know how you feel, but when I walk around in Pima County, Tucson, and other places, people are, a vast majority of wearing masks and acting responsibly, correct, following the guidelines. We also think that definitely partnering with the local municipalities and giving them the ability to enforce and act and act upon their own rules around specifically masks has helped. We've definitely continued to encourage people to wear a mask, to socially distance, and take all the proper precautions. And the communication with our local cities and counties has been nonstop since the very beginning. Obviously, during the quick rise of this, we even hosted calls with the mayors on daily basis. And that's when the executive orders were coming out almost on daily basis, and that immediate feedback from the cities and the counties was very valuable, and we were definitely using that. We still are. We still find it valuable. And we've shifted the frequency of those calls from daily to just having an open door and always being willing to have any kind of discussions. Everyone has my number and other numbers from the office, and we're always willing to get back to people, discuss. The governor is continually hosting meetings with mayors and with, like I said, business leaders and school leaders and so on. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you that the communication with our cities has been very beneficial. And, of course, with the counties, that's more of a, from Department of Health Services, right, that's where we get our information. So that relationship is almost automatic. Nevertheless, we do value it and maximize it as well, but definitely.
Oh, we're with Juan Ciscomani. My last COVID question, and I would love nothing more than to change the topic, but I have to ask this question, Juan, and this is part an advocacy ask and part a question.
Go ahead.
But there's a lot of us, especially in Southern Arizona, who are very concerned about the eviction moratorium that will be ending soon and the tsunami of evictions that will happen as a result. The safety net just doesn't seem to be there for that moratorium to not be extended. Is that conversation happening in the governor's office about either to extend that or what aid to provide our local jurisdictions to survive what will happen when that moratorium ends?
Yeah, that conversation is happening. I'm going to tell you that we don't want to see people suffer. We understand the balance that we have to keep, obviously, between people that are the renters and the ones that, you know, both sides of the equation here. We definitely don't want to see people again lose their place of just where they live, where they sleep, have the rug pulled from under them. And we also understand the ripple effect impacts of this. So yeah, the conversations are happening and everyone else will be hearing from a decision from our office very soon.
Super. Juan, we've got maybe about 3.5 minutes left, so this next question will be a twofer, but it's on the USMCA side of things. Any updates on the USMCA trade agreement? And on that topic, as a border state, do we expect the Arizona-Mexico border to be reopened in August, or will that be extended? What's your best hunch?
Yeah, that's the second one is a great, you know, a very hopeful advocacy question, I think, as well. But let me just say, yeah, USMCA came into effect on July 1st. And, you know, Arizona is going to see the benefits of that. I'll be very quick, just give one example. And that's for small and medium-sized businesses. As really North America focuses on shortening the supply chain and bringing a lot of these manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. from China, our region specifically, North America is set up to win, but our region here in Arizona, Sonora region, is primed to have success with that. I'm not sure if you saw this, but the Ford plant in Hermosillo, which is the capital of Sonora, just got awarded the contract by Ford to produce a new Bronco. So that injects a huge boost of energy into the region. That combined with companies like Lucid Motors and Casa Grande that will have their manufacturing plant in Arizona and Casa Grande, with some of their supply chain coming in from our southern friends. I mean, this is just an example of different ways that USMCA can help. And those are examples of bigger companies like Ford, but Lucid, a startup, of course, in California. And we're going to see a lot of opportunities here for local companies to be able to supply in this new shortening supply chain that we're going to see.
Juan, you answered that question so quickly. We're under 2 minutes. I think I can fit my last question in. Any infrastructure updates related to Oracle Road, which is a state highway, or some of the Sonoran Corridor infrastructure being thought about around Tucson? Any quick updates on that?
Yeah, of course. Listen, the public input is we take it very seriously when it comes to these kind of infrastructure projects. Especially in Oracle Road that also links into State Route 77, of course, which is a major artery for Pima County and also trade and you name it. So we have the funding set up for this. It's been approved about $40 million to renovate this whole project, including sidewalks and path from I-10 to river. And I mean, it's a whole project. And the timeline, the original timeline when this money was first approved, should have been actually completing it as we speak. Around this time in the summer, this should have been completed. Obviously, with COVID and some issues with utility permits and other things just related to the pandemic, this has been pushed into the fall with probably a construction start date of January of 2021. Mm. But that's definitely in the works. It's the money has been approved and the plan is to start construction in January now of 2021. And then quickly on the Sonoran Corridor, there's a feasibility study that takes about three and a half years that got launched in 2017 to do all the proper work in that corridor. And that's where it's at right now. The Department of Transportation for Arizona is evaluating the range of alternatives that we have for this multi-year project, but it fits right in nicely with the SR-189 from Mariposa Port of Entry to make that connection over to I-10 from I-19.
Once it's come on,
really boosting our trade.
Thank you so much. The Tucson Museum of Art is preparing to reopen after COVID-related closures and are excited to introduce in July 2020 the new Kasser Family Wing. The new wing will allow visitors to experience 3,000 plus years of Latin American history at the Tucson Museum of Art, where you can explore works of art from ancient to contemporary and one of the only exhibits in the country like it. TMA is excited to welcome visitors under new safety protocols. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to plan your visit. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. WhyLoveWhereILive.com. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many local businesses right now, their physical location at the MSA Annex is dealing with changes to hours and operation, but I'm so proud of how they've pivoted to online sales and a virtual website tour of their brand new space so you can see what they're up to. Go to WhyLoveWhereILive.com right now and buy local to invest in the people that keep our economy going. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Tucson, welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios. This is your host for this hour of Tipping Point, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We just squeezed every literal last millisecond out of that interview with Juan Ciscomani from Governor Ducey's office. He oversees Governor Ducey's Southern Arizona office and is his senior advisor for regional and international affairs. We covered a lot of topics, and I think we squeezed in his last couple phrases on an infrastructure project. It was dominantly a COVID-19-focused conversation. We'll have him back on soon to talk all the other things that that the state is also still working on besides COVID-19. But now we turn our conversation over to a local race that is heating up even more as we speak. In District 1, four Republicans are running in the primary to replace longtime supervisor, two-term supervisor in District 1, Allie Miller, on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. One of those candidates is on with us for the next 15 minutes. Steve Spain, welcome on the air. How are you?
Zach, I'm well. Good to be on with you again. Thanks for having me.
Yes, for sure. And I'm looking forward to catching up. We had a conversation that was, I think, either pre or early COVID, and so much has changed. Let me ask you this question to kind of kick off. As you are in some way, some form, communicating with voters in this weird time, what are you hearing out there on the trail? What's on the minds of especially Republican voters in District 1?
There's a great deal of concern about how long we're going to suppress the economy, how we're going to recover economically, and waning concern about the virus itself. I find that a lot of people who I talk with genuinely are following the numbers that indicate that the virus is weakening, that the danger is lessening, and are eager to get back to living life. And I understand that there's such a fundamental innate human desire to get out and do things and interact with others and not isolate ourselves the way we've had to for these past several months. And I'm hearing a tremendous amount of that. And then you get into the concerns about Pima County that are the perpetual concerns. Why are the roads so bad? Why are the taxes so high? Why can't we get rid of that one figurehead, Mr. Huckleberry, who seems to be the roadblock to getting any progress done? I hear those three things so often, and that's what's on people's minds. It's let's get back to life and then get back to improving Pima County.
Steve Spain, before we close, I do want to give you the chance to give us your compare and contrast with your three opponents. Republican voters will have four bubbles, four options to fill in. I do want to give you a chance to say why you're the guy that they should bubble in. But before we get there, you know, I look at the Pima County Board of Supervisors. I look at what you would, you know, have to deal with when you get into that seat. Should you get into that seat? The state says that Pima County is really the executor of public health policy at a local level. That's state law. It's what Pima County is charged with. But Pima County also has a role to do economic development. So let's say you're in that seat today, Steve Spain. What would you do on the public health side, or what has been done that you disagree with or would do differently? And then similar question on economic redevelopment. How do we pull our region out of this kind of recession on top of a recession that we were already heading into?
Public health, let's address the public health question first. At some point, we've got to draw a clear line in the sand. Where does the public health authority support the public health, and where are they overstepping their bounds and making decisions for people who should be A, reasonable adults, and B, responsible for making their own choices about how much risk they accept? And I think a good example of that is a conversation I'd heard, an interview I'd heard a few days ago with the superintendent of public schools here. And the approach he's taking is, we're going to make the decisions for the parents. When the medical science indicates that children are not super spreaders, children are not catching this disease, parents should have the option. to accept the risk and let their kid the minuscule, infinitesimal risk to allow their children back to school so they can get back to work, or keep them home if they're able to. And it's not government's place to make those decisions for us. That's my concern with the public health side of things. For months now, talking about the economic side of things, I've been pushing the idea of owning the recovery in Pima County. I think there's a massive push now. People who are upset with the way China handled this thing, upset with China in general, and we'd like to take China out of some of our supply chains, especially medical goods, medications. Why can't we lead the way for the entire country here in Pima County and show how we can very effectively apply American ingenuity and put people back to work to do things better, cheaper, faster, cleaner than they do in China? We can own the recovery here. So anything Pima County can do to minimize itself and get out of the way so that businesses, small and large, can build a recovery here and bring our neighbors in to give them new and better jobs and put them to work building that recovery. That's what Pima County needs to do. That would be the good thing for Pima County to do, is shrink itself and get out of the way.
Steve, I want to circle back on both. We're talking with Steve Spain, a Republican candidate for the Pima County Board of Supervisors in District 1, running in a four-way primary to replace Ali Miller, the longtime Republican seat holder of the District 1 seat. You've mentioned the vision. Give us a taste of the plan. Supervisor Spain is in the seat. What would you not be doing on the public health side, and what would you be doing on the economic side? How do we accomplish the vision you just cast for Pima County?
I see a great deal of propaganda coming out of Pima County on their Twitter account, on their social media accounts, talking about mask wearing. Let's talk about the actual science there. I do genuinely believe science contradicts the narrative we're hearing. And I saw another piece today, very, very thoroughly researched, well cited with many different peer-reviewed and meta studies that show how little masks actually do. The approach that the county should be taking is putting out good information, not propaganda. Let people make the decision for themselves. So I would be working to pull back the fervor, pull back the narrative, and give people good information while making sure that the county has the resources to do the testing that needs to happen. If people want tests, they should be able to get the tests. Make sure that the county is set up to do that work without pushing any specific narrative. Push the science, push the real information, let people decide for themselves. As to the business side of things, and this is where I am genuinely very, very interested, we've got businesses in this community that already have some expertise with plastics, with life-saving medical equipment, with many of the different types of businesses that we could implement or that we could improve to take some of that supply chain back from China. I would very, very much like to see whatever legal means we have to incent those businesses to come in. If we can come up with a special taxing district that somehow lowers their taxes, if we can somehow incent these businesses, and again, using whatever legal means we have. We've played too many scams over the years where we've thrown money, we've come up with, you know, here's a balloon port and we're going to lease the thing to you and you can buy it for a buck at the end of 20 years. No, that's not the kind of game we need to play. That's picking winners and losers, and that's not the approach. We need a level playing field for whoever's going to come in, but we need to incent them to be here. And you know what? At the end of the day, yeah, you can try to come up with new ways to do that. Really, the single best thing we can do for Pima County is to drop that primary property tax rate that is the highest in the state of Arizona and make it more attractive for businesses and their employees to be here in Pima County. Make it easier to live and work in Pima County so that those businesses want to be here. That would make a huge difference. That right there would get people in, businesses in, that would help us to own that recovery.
I want to touch on one more of your campaign platform. Wow, that was hard to get out. Campaign platform elements, Steve. And then I would love to close with a quick review of your bio. My goal with these second conversations is to get more in the weeds on your policies and proposals. We did get to meet you earlier in the spring, but you are in a four-year primary, and so I want to give kind of that one last chance to compare and contrast with the other three candidates, Steve. You talk about the primary tax rate. I want to bring this back to the budget that was just passed. Throughout all of this, the county continued their commitment to the PAYGO program to fix unincorporated Pima County roads, even in spite of some budget shortfalls. If my memory serves me correct, when you take in the secondary tax rate, Pima County, even though it has a high primary tax rate, in total, it's kind of in the middle point of high taxes across the state when you look at the 15 counties. A lot would say, you know, we want to fix our roads, but lower taxes. We're not really in the position to do that. I believe you disagree with that, but how do you make both happen, lowering taxes and fixing our roads as they've been neglected for a long time?
Well, let's talk about it, because you mentioned that PAYGO program. PAYGO is a budget, and it's nothing more. And fortunately, they've kicked that can down the road for a year. I hope PAYGO goes away, because the way it works is to increase that primary property tax rate. But what it's slated to do over the course of 5 years is put less funding towards roads than what the county receives in gas tax funds from the state in 1 year. So, yeah, it sounds like this great, hey, we've got something that we're going to use to fund roads. It's a minuscule amount of money. What we need to do is use the funds that we're already receiving and use them wisely without the waste. We've got to stop buying things like the Golden Pin Lanes and then, oh no, we found out we didn't do our due diligence and now we're on the hook for asbestos remediation too. That wasn't part of the deal. We waste so much of the resources that the county receives, the county has. If we would just cut the waste and be responsible with the spending, we could make massive inroads towards improvements without having to come up with new schemes that raise taxes. We can do far better with what we've already got and less if we stop the waste. And that's the problem. That has been the problem for a very, very long time in Pima County, is we waste the funds we've got.
Steve Spain, as we round the corner on this conversation, this will be our last conversation on this show on the air before the early August primary. Give us a quick compare and contrast of why Republican voters listening from District 1 should be voting for you as opposed to your three opponents in the Republican primary. And remind us who Steve Spain is and how you got here real quick.
Well, I'll give you kind of a quick hit. I am the only grassroots conservative here. Every other candidate in this race is establishment. They've held office, they've run for office, they've worked in the party, they've done the political thing for far too long. That's not who I am. There's one other major differentiator that has recently come to light that is immensely frustrating to me, and that is all three of my opponents are now on record in support of new taxes in one form or another. I am the only of the four candidates who has consistently and unwaveringly come out against any form of new taxes, even those hidden taxes like the PAYGO scheme. Every other candidate has supported a new tax. That's not me. That's not what I'm about. So I am just coming out of a 15-year career in hospitality IT. I've got contract experience through that. I've got budgeting experience through that. I've got some similarities to the background that Allie Miller brought to the office. And that's why, part of why anyway, she has the confidence in me that I will be able to continue on the work that she's been doing. And that's why Allie Miller has endorsed me over the other three. So I'm not a politician. I'm not a career politician. I'm not an establishment type. I am a guy coming out of the private world who wants to improve the situation here in Pima County. And then at some point, get back to IT, because it really is what I love. I don't see this as a long-term career like, you know, some of our senators and representatives who have been in D.C. for decades. That's not what I'm interested in doing. I'm interested in making an impact here in the community where I grew up, the community that I love, and then moving on.
Steve Spain, Republican candidate for District 1 on the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Ballots have dropped. Steve, for anyone listening who still hasn't submitted their ballot, wants to review platform, wants to look at candidates, wants to donate or volunteer in a way, where can they go to find out more about you and how to get involved?
I like to make it easy to find me. So if you go to Vote Steve Spain, that's Spain just like the country, votestevespain.com, or on Facebook, facebook.com/votestevespain, all one word, you'll find contact info for me. I have been, the past week, especially since the mailers and ballots went out, I've been on the phone almost off the hook with folks who are calling to ask me questions. So please feel free to do so. If I don't answer immediately, I'm returning calls as well. I'll get back to you. So feel free to reach out. The number is on the website. The email is up on the website. Reach out. Ask me questions. I hope you'll want to vote for me once you know a little bit more about me. I genuinely think I offer Pima County something much better than what my competitors do. So I'd love to hear from everybody out there. But Zach, I'm grateful for the opportunity to talk with you before the primary. So thank you very kindly.
Yes, sir. Steve, thanks for making the time for us this morning. Best of luck to you in the next 3 weeks. We'll see you some way, somehow on the other side. Take care, sir.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Zach. Take care.
Tucson, we'll go to our last break of this Thursday edition of Tipping Point. We'll be right back to wrap up. Don't go anywhere. Lots more to go. Here we go again. The Tucson summer heat is upon us, straining our AC units and our budgets as energy costs go up, and we hope we can get just one more year out of our air conditioners. But did you know changing your AC system out now could drop your power bill by half? All while getting 10 years of warranties and guarantees. The team at Ultra Air Conditioning can get you taken care of with super competitive cost to install and up to $3,000 in rebates. They also have great financing options available. Don't wait. Call today, 392-8008. 25 years ago, the University of Arizona took a bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. This year, we celebrate 25 years of success at the UA Tech Park. Whether it's the 20 new startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just opened up, we're celebrating this anniversary year by telling the stories and ideas of Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Hey Tucson, Zach Yenser here, and I'm excited to celebrate a business that is near and dear to my heart and making it through COVID-19 successfully. Decibel Coffee Works is excited to announce they are open again for your business from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the MSA Annex, just a block west of the 10 on Cushing and Avenida del Convento. Come on by for a quick cup of quality roasted hot or cold brew, or get free shipping when you order two or more bags of coffee online. Head to decibelcoffeeworks.com for more info. What are the community stories that define us? Talking about these stories are what Tipping Point is about, and what Storyteller PR, a public relations firm in Tucson, has been doing meaningfully for years in our community. Storyteller PR activates publicity, social media, and event production to establish and strengthen the reputation of Southern Arizona brands and organizations. What story do you need to tell? Visit us at StorytellerPR.com to learn more. Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA. Good morning, Tucson, again. If you're like me and my family, COVID-19 has made us take a hard look at our finances and financial planning. If that's you too, and my hunch is it is, give my friends Jason Robinson and Brian Finn over at Mass Mutual a call at 274-3749. They can help you navigate through these challenging times, integrate your insurance and investments with a purpose and a plan, and create a holistic financial strategy that works for you. Call them at 274-3749 to get started. Thanks for joining us today, Tucson. If you jumped in partway through the hour, we spent the first two segments with Juan Siscomani, with the governor's office. He oversees the Southern Arizona office for the governor here in Tucson, and talked with us quite a bit about COVID 19 and where, how we got here and where we're going. Asked him a number of questions and took your thoughts as well on social media and incorporated them in. So I hope I got to your question. And if I didn't, I hope that I got to the one that you wanted to ask. KVUI.com/podcasts. Is where you can go to catch up on that. We also continue with Your Vote, Your Voice, our series here on 1030 The Voice and Tipping Point, where we talk to local, state, and national candidates ahead of the primary and general elections coming up this year. We knew we were going to be busy in 2020 with elections. Little did we know that that would be the back burner conversations. And we looked up and said, hey, it's July. We got a month till the primary. And we've been trying to fill our calendar here on the show with as many last conversations as possible with the candidates running in the districts and jurisdictions and municipalities that, quite honestly, probably have the largest impact on our day-to-day. So we had Vic Williams on this week from District 1, the most hotly contested race, one of the most, if not the most, in Pima County. We had Steve Spain on. We will have Bill Beard and Rhonda Pena on next week on the Republican side as we round the corner to that early August primary. So that is what's shaken out. Hey, I also wanted to share with you that tomorrow is a 4-segment show, and it's 4 separate conversations. It's going to be packed from beginning to end. I'm excited about every single one of them, but the one that related to today's conversation is I will be having guests in to talk about the eviction crisis that we are facing. There was a moratorium on evictions that was given by Governor Ducey at the state level to basically say, look, if someone can't pay their rent, right, and the reasons now to not be able to pay your rent are even higher during COVID-19 than before, there was a moratorium on evictions. That moratorium ends in the next few days. And it was interesting. I found out from a social media comment, a friend on Facebook, that he is seeing. Let me pull this up because I want to speak to this here specifically, and we'll get into this in detail tomorrow. But a real challenge here that a lot of people aren't talking about, they need to be. A commenter on my social media page said, a city grant program worth millions won't launch until a week after the executive order expires here at the end of July. Additional funds to social service agencies is a great start, but when they run out of beds, it is hard to create more, even with additional funds. I think the part that I was most interested to share today ahead of tomorrow's conversation about evictions in Southern Arizona is that there are families who still haven't gotten their federal stimulus checks. And so we've got this whole situation where there was a partial safety net for families struggling to pay rent who are at the point where they will be evicted. There is a challenge in getting those stimulus checks even now. A lot of unemployment checks will run out end of July, right? So the stimulus passed by Congress, that money will run out by the end of the month. Republicans and Democrats in Congress, we really have no idea where they're going with this. They don't know where they're going with this in terms of a second wave of stimulus funding. So at the end of the month, we're facing this kind of collision of factors where if families have received stimulus funding or they haven't, certain benefits go away. The eviction moratorium goes away. We're asking families to stay in their homes as much as possible. There's just a perfect storm developing here where we just don't have enough money, time, or resources. I asked Juan Siscomani from the governor's office, where are we going with this? What's going to happen? I'll be talking with a housing group tomorrow about what they are advocating for and the policies they are asking for to make sure that families who need to be in their homes right now are in their homes. And by the way, it doesn't go unnoticed to me either, that there are small and mid-sized landlords that need those rent checks to come in. There's a whole other crisis, right? I am not saying that families should not pay their rent if they can. It's a bad strategy for everybody. It's bad for them as families. It's bad for our landowners and renters. There's a whole economic piece of this that we're not talking about either, where landlords aren't getting paid. And something has to move on this. And I'm worried about it. I think we all should be worried about it. We'll talk about it on our Friday show. That does it for us today. Hugh Hewitt coming up after me, as always. Bill Buckmaster after him at noon. Lots of local news and talk coming your way the rest of the day here on 1030 The Voice. It's been a great Thursday with you, Tucson. I'll see you on Friday. We'll close out the week strong. Thanks for hanging. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, take care, and I'll see you tomorrow.